Okay, turn your Bibles to Exodus. Exodus 23. Edgar's going to read our main verse, which is Exodus 23, 14 through 16. I recently, what was it, month? In April, I preached the first conference in Killeen, Texas, and that was a new, they just started having a conference, so that made me go over and examine the whole idea of conferences. So there's going to be part history lesson of how we started having conferences and part theological reason and then what it is we're aiming at. So conferences is the title of this. Exodus 23, 14 through 16.
Each year you must celebrate three festivals in my honor. First, celebrate the festival of unleavened bread. For 7 days, the bread you eat must be made without yeast, just as I commanded you. Celebrate this festival annually at the appointed time in early spring, in the month of Abib, for that is the anniversary for your departure from Egypt. No one may appear before me without an offering. Second, celebrate the festival of harvest, when you bring me the first crops of your harvest. Finally, celebrate the festival of the final harvest, at the end of the harvest season, when you have harvested all the crops from your fields.
Okay, so I chose this scripture. Most translations say feast. I like his translation. Whatever he's reading from says festival. But the point was God wanted the nation to gather. That was the point. Three times a year they were to gather and they were to focus on certain things. And that's what's going on here. So that is kind of what a conference is all about. Let me give you a background. Pastor Mitchell, of course, was not saved in our fellowship. He was saved in a denomination called Foursquare, the Foursquare Gospel Church. His reference point would be conventions. They had annual conventions, and in their conventions, they were partly preaching. That was, of course, there were some sermons. But in their conventions, a lot of it was business. That was where they would go over finances. They would have meetings where they would review finances. They would have meetings to determine changes to their bylaws or rules. It would be in a conference setting that they would have elections, and they would elect certain officials to positions, various positions. In his opinion, because the conventions involved elections, he felt that when you went there, the attention was placed upon successful guys, or as we would say, movers and shakers, right? So it's kind of twofold. Number one, if you want power, you want to identify who's an up-and-comer. Right? You kind of want to associate with them. They're going up. You kind of want to be with them. The other thing is because it's an election, it's kind of like people would be nice to you. Like, have you lost weight? You know, you're looking good. That kind of thing. That was his opinion. So that was his background. Now, in our fellowship, Pastor Mitchell came here in January. We arrived January 6, 1970. We, not long after, started getting young people saved. The Jesus movement was in full swing. We started planting churches in 1973. 3 years after he arrived, we planted two churches in the first year. That would be Wickenburg and Tucson. And that was through discipleship. Instead of going to a school to become a pastor, it was hands-on. He trained them and sent them out. So from 1973, Pastor Mitchell began to plant churches a lot and quickly. So he had a suggestion from a friend. You have to remember, Pastor Mitchell was starting out. His friends or reference points were people he knew from the denomination. A friend of his suggested that we should hold a deliverance convention. And he said, what's that? And they said, well, let's gather some of your workers together and we will preach to them. Maybe let's have some evening services and let's have some morning seminars. And so they did that. He had never seen that before. So in other words, I want to emphasize the difference was they weren't going to hold elections. They weren't going to go over finances. It wasn't going to be rules based. So he saw immediately from that first deliverance convention, number one, it was very helpful that pastors were preached to. Pastors, by nature, you are giving out constantly, you know, three sermons a week, Bible studies, you know, Sunday schools, et cetera, you're giving out, giving out, giving out. So he saw, number one, this is very helpful that pastors are now preached to. That is helpful. The other thing he said that was he felt was very helpful is that the pastors getting together and fellowshipping. And so pastors do deal with things on a different level. They enjoy relationship with everybody, but there are things that pastors go through. If they just hang out with somebody from the church, they're not going to be able to discuss. They're just not going to be able to relate on that level. Or in fact, it might terrify the people if they heard some of the things that actually have to go on. So he said, wow, that's very helpful. So they started doing that. Let's do it again. Next year, and so they did it again, and then they actually started doing this every 6 months. It became natural. You have to understand, at that point in time, planning a church, we didn't have a conference, so planning a church could happen anytime. And so it naturally became, because we were planting churches so regularly, that as part of the conference, the aim is that the conference is heading someplace, and on Friday night, they started saying, that is when we will launch new churches. And they began to do that. And so this is the essence of a conference. Overall is that we are aiming for planting churches. It is not merely meant to be entertainment, information, and all that. We are gathered to plant churches. In 1978, we deliberately planted our first church internationally. Let me back up. We started planting initially in Arizona, New Mexico, California. It was close by. Most of our churches were being planted. We had a Mexican who came to Prescott. He was illegal. Why you would do that in 1970-something, it wasn't like you were going to blend in. So he ultimately was deported, had to go back. I don't know where he was from, but he chose to go to Nogales because that was as close as he could be where people maybe could visit him. We planted a worker in Arizona, Nogales, Arizona. It wasn't going well, but he would cross the border. And things are going fantastic. He's winning family and friends. Mexican's very responsive. And so in time, the guy said, I got a crazy idea. What if we plant a church in Mexico? So that happened naturally. It wasn't out of a conference. Secondly, Holland. My father knew someone, too long of a story, but had met someone that he used to know who was had like a large Bible study in Holland. And out of that, why don't you start a church? But again, it wasn't connected to a conference. 1978, my father had gone in 1977. A man, they were from the same church in Phoenix. This man went as a missionary to Australia, became the overseer in, I don't know if it was all of Australia, but West Australia. Invited my dad to come preach. 1977, he saw the potential and saw as he preached that it worked. The gospel worked here. He actually sent a band. They did concerts like we would do. It worked. And so in 1978, on a Thursday night, for the very first time, we announced we're going to send a couple overseas and we raise money to pay for that. So that has become kind of a focus in our conferences ever since, depending on the size, of course. But in almost every conference, Friday night they will plant churches. Thursday night we focus on international. If they can plant a church, they do. If they cannot, they at least raise money and they focus on it. Okay, so that is now the history of where our conferences came from. We read a scripture, and these are annual feasts, three annual feasts, or as he said, festivals. Feast and festival, of course, is because it's meant to be a celebration. It wasn't meant to be a bummer to do this. But God said he gives the specific time. You are to gather together at set times, and in each of these, you are to focus on certain things. They are to remember what God had done, who God was, and what their purpose was. And so you see here the Feast of Ingathering, Pentecost, and that they are remembering being brought out of Egypt. They're remembering the goodness of God. They're focusing on who God is and what their job. So the point of these feasts is God knows human nature. You know what you're supposed to be doing, but we easily drift. So he says, I want you to set aside time and focus. So the point of these feasts is to recalibrate, to make sure that you're still on track with the original vision and God's will. Okay, so this brings us then, now we have, I'm pulling this out of the air, I could look at it, I should have looked it up this morning, but if I remember right, we have in the United States per year, if I remember right, there would be like 18 conferences a year, and then overseas, I think we now have like 38 conference centers around the world, which is why in some months, every week there's conferences. Some weeks there's more than one conference that is going on. Okay, here's the purpose of conferences. Number one is so that pastors can be preached to and refreshed. Very common that pastors, as I said, are giving out. You heard me preach on virtue. Virtue has gone out. That's why Jesus said, I have to be recharged in some ways. That is something in a conference setting. Pastors come. Pastors can be very discouraged when they come. It's not uncommon. There are pastors who have had discussions with their wife or in their head. They say, when I come to conference, I'm quitting. I can't take this anymore, and I'm struggling. It's hard. Not getting people saved, struggling financially. People are upset. So I can't go on. They come into the atmosphere. Remember, this is a feast. It's a festival. And when they come in the atmosphere of the Holy Spirit and preaching, God refreshes them. This is actually a common comment I've heard through the years. People say, I was so discouraged and didn't think I'd go on. The first service, I could have gone back home after the first service. God did. It's a supernatural dimension. So that's the purpose, is for pastors to be preached to and refreshed. Number two is a recalibration. When you come to conference, it's not like someone is going to preach something that you have never heard before in your entire life. It's like, no way. How many angels can fit on the head of a pin? We didn't know that. That's not what happens. Is often what happens is we are saying the same things because human nature tends to drift. What is our purpose? Sinners, evangelism, discipleship, church planting, world evangelism. That is our calling. So the preaching comes, that recalibration means to line up. To calibrate is to line up. So that's what happens. We come together and we are recalibrated. I remember. I somehow got distracted, but now I know what we should do. Recalibration, that's the second part of it. Thirdly, inspiration. Conferences are supernatural. Something happens beyond information. If it was information, we could just mail it to people. Read this. This is what you need to know. We got a book. We got a handbook. What's the manual? Now, conferences are supernatural. One of the feasts that we read there was the Feast of Pentecost, right? Which is the outpouring of God's Spirit we know and God's ultimate fulfillment. That's not an accident. Because conferences are supernatural. People are stirred in conference, maybe like they're not stirred in any other service in a conference. We give a challenge for calling to preach. That's very common. Someone will give a challenge if you've never responded to, you feel God calling you to preach. In a conference would be a very common place that people feel God calling them to preach the gospel or feel called to go overseas. There's something about an atmosphere of the Holy Spirit. There are people, they are stirred. I need to pioneer. They're pastors. I need to plant a church, or I need to go overseas. This is something that happens. And often it is, I've heard people say, I had no intention of planting a church, pioneering, going overseas, but God did something in me. I was stirred. That is an inspiration. It's supernatural, and it is humbling. It actually that's not the right word. It actually puts fear in me when I hear people say, and I heard you preach at a conference, and God spoke to me, and then they told me what they did, the actions that they took, they changed the course of their whole life. I don't take that lightly. But God does something supernatural. I can't, you know, in conference, I can't go, you, you know, it's not up to me. God has to do it. If he's not doing it, it's not going to work. We need pressure. Fourth thing is that in conferences, we raise money for world evangelism. A local church cannot afford to reach the whole world. One church, that's impossible. So when we stand up, it depends on the nation, of course, but let's say it is a Westerner that we're sending out, and I'm differentiating. We sometimes send natives back to their homeland, and where their homeland, everything may be much cheaper. So, but let's say a classic, if I'm sending somebody, let's pick a nation, to South Africa. I know that by the time they have their first service, so a couple is announced on Thursday night. So numbers of things, the moment that we do that, we establish a bank account and we start shoveling money. Okay, so the guy, him and his 14 children, they don't have passports. I got to get passports for all of them. They got to get visas. Then they have to, they need certain amounts of equipment that has to be purchased before they go. I have to send their goods. I have to do that. That is becoming incredibly expensive. If I can ship someone's goods overseas, that's assuming they're going to take their furniture. If we can do that for under $12,000, I'm shouting hallelujah. And it could be $15,000, it could be $20,000. It depends. Islands are the most expensive of all, depending on where you go. So then you got to fly them there. They have to get there. They got to stay in a hotel for a while. You got to provide them with food. Then you got to get a house. In many cases, they got to pay 3 months, 6 months, a year in advance. You got to pay it. You don't have a choice. Just to get a house, you got to buy a car. Cars, we don't buy them, 63 V-dubs, because we don't want to be putting money into repairs. So we buy them a decent car that has a good chance of not breaking down. If I can spend under $25,000 for a car, I'm shouting hallelujah overseas. But and it can be, again, on an island, $35,000, that's just what it costs. That's the way it is. So my point is, by the time they get there, then they got to get a building, got to buy more equipment, get set up. By the time they have their first service, it would not be uncommon, depending on the nation, $60,000 to $80,000. And they haven't had a service yet. So that's why it's like, well, that's great. How many did you plant? And then we get like this, only four? Please, like what kind of, but this is mega money. We sent a guy to Japan. By the time he had his first service, it cost $125,000. And we hadn't even had a single service yet. So, yeah, I'm telling you this. So the only way that we can reach the world is we announce it on Thursday. Why? Because other churches are there. There may be a guy, he's got a church of 40 people. He can't plant a church overseas, but he can join together. Now, every single person can join together. We raise money for world evangelism, and that makes it possible. Okay, so that's very important. Fifthly, churches are planted. We're making tangible progress in reaching, go into all the world and preach the gospel. So kind of at the end of the week, we are 11 churches closer to reaching the world, right? It's tangible progress. And now this is, as I say, to have an entire conference, have all that atmosphere and not plant a church is depressing. You know, so that's kind of the whole point. Churches are planted. Sixth is that in conference, God gives practical challenges of obedience. Our conferences are very different than the church world. You heard the people in offerings talk about this. If you were to, in the outside of our fellowship, say, I want to go to a conference. Okay. What you do is you register. There's a registration fee just for the privilege of coming. You know, whatever the fee is going to be, $250, $500, whatever it's going to cost. You want somewhere to stay? Book your own hotel. You want to eat? Pay for it yourself. And then even some of the seminars, it's like that one will cost you more. So it costs you money to go to conference. In ours, I send out a letter and I say, you can, the pastor, we will pay for the pastor and three couples. And then, of course, there are guys that they send. They're not good at math, so they send 19 couples, so which we allow, but you know, wink, wink, you're not supposed to do that. But so we have them come, we will pay for their hotel. And when they come, they get like $100, which is not much these days, but they get some food money. So every single couple, pre-COVID, we were reaching up to just under 650 hotel rooms, and a conservative estimate is each couple cost like around $650, $700 in hotel and then the meal money. Do the math. Conferences cost a stinking lot of money. That's why I often tell guys when they, Pioneer Pastors, they come and they look at the conference offerings. You know, Joe Campbell, Mark Olson, they're going long, they're pulling hard, and they want to do that every, but you don't get it. We are, our conferences now cost us a minimum of $550,000. Over $500,000 it costs to have a conference. So that's why we got to raise money. So as a practical of that is we take offering. Much more happens than simply we're paying the bills. So money then becomes a practical way for you to obey God. Are you going to do what God says in your life? Yes, I will go to the ends of the... How about you just help us pay for the conference? It's practical. Testimonies. I always get, after every conference, I almost get as many testimonies of people who God spoke to them in an offering as I do as in sermons. Is God spoke to them. Something changed, miracle breakthroughs. I often get testimonies. God spoke to me in an offering I gave, and God provided miracle money. God provided a building. God gave us a breakthrough in converts, or you know, whatever it might be, miracle breakthroughs. So all of that is going on in a conference. Those are the practical pastors preach to, recalibration, inspiration, raising money, world evangelism, planning churches, and practical challenges of obedience. So, in our fellowship, our aim is to have more conference centers. So, what does it take to have a conference? We have two different kinds of conferences. Number one, we call them organic, and that is if you have planted 25 churches, and that, you know, it doesn't mean you have to literally plant 25. It can be you planted 15, and then your guys have planted churches. When you reach the number of 25, at that point, then, you know, depending on the guy, et cetera, but basically 25, then that's called an organic conference. Is you now are able to Killeen. I preached the first conference because they have more than 25, or they right on 25 churches out of that. That's organic. The second type is area conferences. So we do have conference centers that the guy hasn't actually planted 25, but he's servicing an area. In South Africa, for instance, we're very isolated in Southern Africa. We got a whole bunch of churches, and so we started a conference that was an area conference. So those are the two different types of conferences we have. Okay, any questions now about conferences? Something you want to ask?
When people are announced out of Prescott and another church,
When you see that Prescott/Ogden, Prescott/anything, what that means generally is that it's somebody else's man, but they can't afford it.
Right.
So on some level of finances, Prescott is going to fund that. So that's what that means. So in one sense, you're letting them know, this guy, you know, he has a guy. He has not a dollar to his name, but so if we're just saying out of, you know, Timbuktu, he's planning a church, that's kind of not fair. So you'll see that in conference centers. You'll see Chandler/ or and, you know, and that's what it means. We're partnering financially, generally. Yep.
Is that usually international works only that you Prescott partners? Or?
Generally, in times past, they had guys who I'll help fund it financially, you know, we'll do it. That doesn't tend to work well. That's okay if it's in a big city, but overall, you run into problems. Then you get guys who, he's upset, he's putting money in, but then the pastor is not dealing with this guy who's a doofus or doing dumb things, and so it tends to cause problems. So, but again, it doesn't mean that a person is sinning, that, or that we forbid it, or that you have the mark of the beast if you choose to partner. So we do a lot of things. Yep.
Do you know of any other organizations besides ours that do anything like this, or is it pretty much just us?
That's a broad question because, of course, my reference points would only be what I see in Christian magazines or publications. So mm-hmm. I don't attend conferences, so I can't I can't say definitively there is no one in the world. But anecdotal evidence, anytime any of our pastors tell someone from another fellowship what we do, they're like blown away. They've never heard of that in their life. And especially internationally. Internationally, I don't know if you understand how the church world works. Someone says, I want to be a missionary. Well, you first of all generally got to go to a mission board. Often the church can't handle that. So you go to a mission board, you tell them, and they say, great. Or even if you're in the Assembly of God, you say, I want to be a missionary. Okay, great. So raise money.
Yeah.
You raise money for your support for the next 2 years. So you got to go around, you know, back in the day it'd be slideshows, pictures of palm trees on the island you're hoping to go to or whatever, starving children, raise, would you be willing to give? But they don't know this person, right? You're actually getting, as it used to be like, you just get random people, could I come and make a presentation? to try to raise money. So, but we don't know if these guys are scammers. We don't know if the guy's doing drugs, beating his wife. Well, you know. So the difference of ours is everything is known. The person that stands up, we know that someone knows them in general things. So, no, I'm unaware that anybody does what we do. And it all basically is their conferences on various levels are you pay for the privilege of coming and invest in your own ministry. We, on the other hand, pay for missionaries, and then we hear about some guy who, are you coming to conference? You know, I find out he's struggling. Come on, we'll pay your airfare. You need to be here. You need it. Mm-hmm. Right? So I don't know if anybody else is doing that. No.
I often heard Pastor Mitchell say that the Four Square was pastors like conferences.
Yeah.
And that we are people conferences.
Yeah.
And that was, is that just basically what you're talking about as far as preaching to the pastors and the people instead of business only?
It actually was basically everybody attending. It was a pastor's conference. Basically, everybody attending was a pastor. They didn't have people who weren't pastors. Yeah, it was a different world. I went, I had two experiences as a kid with Foursquare conferences. Number one, when I was a kid, I went with Dad to L.A., and back then, they had a wave in church world of, I don't want to make you feel like I'm preaching to you. So they would sit on stools. They got rid of pulpits. And I remember that very I was a kid, and I remember very clearly it was October during World Series. The Dodgers are playing, and he's like, I don't want to make you feel like you're in church tonight or like I'm preaching to you. You know, does anybody know who's winning the World Series? And a guy had a transistor radio. Had everybody go, the Dodgers are winning 4-3, you know. That was when I was a kid. In later years, when I was a disciple in Perth, in the Foursquare thing, every church that you had out, you then had you had delegates. That meant from your church, you have one church, so that means you have two or four or whatever delegates who can vote. So I went, I was one of the delegates for our church in a Foursquare conference. That was a trip. Is in that they so I had to sit in on a meeting. They were talking about a missionary. I still remember this. This guy was in Papua New Guinea or some little place, and they're going over his books, you know, for the year. And the guy was upset. He bought $16 worth of pencils. Why does he need $16 worth of pencils? You know, I think today I have decisions. It's like, I need this, and it's going to be $27,000. Okay. Back to the, oh, that I was worried about $16 worth of pencils. You know, so that's my only experience of it. So, yeah, pastors' conferences, it was only four pastors. But for us, we're trying to inspire. That's the inspiration factor. And we want everybody to participate.
The title of the conference depends on the circumstances.
It can. For example, Gallup has recently conference and the title was not to be one to feel. It can, yes. You know, you have related to what's going on in the world, yes, urgency, something in desperate time, what does it say? Something our banner on the wall. Yeah. It can be, but honestly, it doesn't really matter. You just need a theme and some nice looking graphics. It doesn't really change our life. I've been to conferences where everybody follows the theme and preaches. That's great. I've been to where they have the theme, it's announced, and nobody ever refers to it again. So it's not crucial to our survival. So yeah. I don't know. Probably early days. Yeah. Probably early days because our church was coming, so it's very helpful for our people to hear. Because they're the ones investing in it, right? Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the original point of a report is this is where your money's going. It's very encouraging. This works. Hey, I'm giving my hard-earned dollars, and that guy just talked about a drug addict that got saved and delivered, right? Yeah. So I can't say it definitively, but I bet almost from the beginning.
And the business aspects of the fellowship, are those done kind of in the leadership meetings ahead of time?
Yeah, yeah, that's a different issue. As far as we're talking about issues, we have two different things. Of course, we are pastor-led, so it may be through the year something arises that we don't exactly, you know, our joke, I just was joking with Joe Campbell on the way here, and our standard joke among pastors is chapters of the manual that Pastor Mitchell never gave us, you know. Because human nature is like, whoa, that was a different one. Like, she used to be a man, but now she's a woman, but now what? You know, that wasn't in the manual, so we gotta, you know. So you can, of course, on the fly, okay, this is what we should do. But then there are trends that we're facing, all of the churches, or there's a problem. People are doing things that are causing problems. So then we have an annual leadership meeting, and we meet together and discuss that. What should we do in the case of? And we, you know, we come to that. Things that happen over the years, right? So let me give you one example, is that we met and discussed, because you have, in our world, people who come and they have a conviction for a sexual offense and molested a child, and now they want to come to your church and they're a registered sex offender or rapist or whatever. So we met and discussed all of the things. Hey, I know this guy is a good guy, but there are people who look up. I don't know if you know that. When you have visitors that come, there are people, what's your name? And they go home and they look up because they're concerned for their children. And so then it's if you know someone is a child molester and you let them come and they molest, God forbid, they molest a child in our church, there's been instances where the entire church was destroyed. It just doesn't go well. So we met and made a policy decision, and that is that in our fellowship, if you're a registered sex offender, you're not allowed to come. For insurance, for safety, for things like that. And so, and part of that is a bummer, because I'm sure there are sincere people, but in the bigger picture, that was a policy decision that we met in leadership, discussed from all angles, and came to the conclusion that is our policy. Right, so I'm giving you a practical example. And there are others that are not quite so dire. It's just
the bylaws and
bylaws are kind of a different thing, but you know, simple things of, you know, we have churches should not be planted within 2 miles of another fellowship church because people were fighting, right? The guy, he's building a church, and the guy, I got a building, it's like next door to yours. That's pastors are having fist fights in the parking lot. That's not good. Sorry, Zach.
So you talked about one of the benefits of conference being that pastors get to fellowship with each other,
uh-huh,
and you know, outside of getting friends with their congregation.
Sure.
What about when a pastor brings people and he's kind of with them the whole week?
That's not ideal. You know, it would be better if he could arrange with somebody to, hey, take these guys out, you know.
Right.
So, but because it's helpful. One of the things that's helpful, it's hard for you to relate. My wife and I were pioneering. We're isolated. We're on an island. There's only one church on the whole island, and it's got, you know, some old ladies and a few crazy people. And so it wasn't like it was a reference point. That's what we should be. So you're telling your converts, you know, you should pray, you should give. But they kind of look at it like, yeah, but you're the pastor. Of course you're saying that. Then we had an impact team come from my home church, and they saw just people from the church. It absolutely transformed them. It's like, wow, this is not a pastor, and they're saying the same thing. They're living the same way. So that's helpful, yeah. So therefore, if you take your people, it would actually be a good thing if you expose them to people in the home church, right? For that reason.
I've often wondered, you know, we go to our pastors for when we need counsel and things like that. But I've often wondered, like, where do you go when you need counsel? I mean, who's your pastor? Because you're a leader, and you can't, like you said, you can't go to your congregation and dump on them if you have something that's kind
of... Well, yeah, of course, you know, things work up. And my job, I get the, you know, a good portion of the time my phone rings is not someone wishing me Merry Christmas. It's a problem, right? So things flow up, of course, to me. In one sense, I am at the top, but that doesn't mean that I, you know, while I don't have a pastor above me, I have fellow leaders that I respect. So I involve them. What do you think in that? I don't act, I am the grand poobah, you know, I decide the whole world. I ask, you know, I have friends and we discuss things. That's wisdom, right? Yeah. But pastors going up all the way, they always have somebody that they can talk to. Yes.
Yeah,
they
just was wondering how you keep your head from exploding. Who do you talk to?
So, well, sometimes it does explode, but super glue is a wonderful thing. Yep.
Whenever we were going to Oceanside, we used to go to Yuma for harvesters every year at our conference. Are those pretty common?
Well, harvesters are, harvesters is at any level that you have churches out, you can have a harvesters. Harvesters is the, on a lower level, the purpose is to gather to focus so your people see this is the investment. The difference is we do not plant churches out of harvesters, only conferences. Because there's a practical reason. If you let a guy has two churches out and then he's going to plant churches out of his harvesters, then you come to conference, it dilutes, then we come and it dilutes the whole thing, and he doesn't really have enough to. So we, it's kind of a rule that we have come to, you don't plant churches, but all of the other elements are the same in many ways. They're calibrating, the people are meeting, they're fellowshipping, it has value. Yes. So that was what the Yuma Harvesters was. There were churches out who came and focused together. Yeah.
You mentioned how much it cost to hold the conference. $550,000 on average to hold the conference here.
Here, yeah.
Do you raise the money before you have the conference, or is it a part of the conference to raise the money?
Well, no, it's all in the conference. Of course, in Prescott, we're savers. We're a very good steward. Pastor Mitchell was a good steward. Hopefully I'm a good steward, so we don't ever go to conference without a dollar to our name. But in essence, what you want is even though we have savings, I want to pay for the whole conference from the conference. Because otherwise then you're just, you know, then there's no point having savings, you're just using it up.
And then also pay for launching as well.
And yes. Yeah, so that's what you want. You want to raise the money to pay for it. We need to raise $550,000, and then overseas, then we're often raising another $300,000 to $400,000. If you paid attention in the last few business meetings, our conferences in 1 week, we tend to raise over $1 million in 1 week between the international and paying for the conference. So, and that's a miracle. That's just unbelievable that we're able to do that. Yeah.
I was going to ask something along the same lines, is that we pay for the conference. The conference alone, just the hotels, airfare, et cetera, fees, the $550,000.
Yes.
And then we also try to raise for international. And all the stuff that we launched, though, that's not, that's outside of.
No, domestic, that's different. Domestic, first of all, the ones that are announced out of Prescott, of course, we pay for that out of our regular church planting. The pledge that I just took for church planting, right. That's where we pay for that.
Okay.
So, no, the money we're raising is not paying for the Friday night, only Thursday night. Thursday night pays for Thursday night. All the other offerings are to pay for the conference costs, right? So, Yuma, Ogden, any of our churches, Casa Grande, Española, they plant churches out of here, but they're going to pay for that. That has nothing to do with our offerings. No, they do that, but and that's the privilege of it. Your people are excited, you're excited, great. Now we gotta raise money for it, you gotta pay for it. So then they have to do exactly what we do. They need to raise pledges. And this is what it's gonna cost per month. We need to X number of dollars to get them there, and we need ongoing support of so much. So then every church does that. But that's, raising money is how you grow people. You're not just raising money, you're growing people, you're growing churches. and powerful things happen. South Africa, everything changed in the conference the very first time we paid for the conference. Something shifted supernaturally, and that's true in a local church. So it's great. It's a wonderful idea. Yeah, I want to plant a church. Okay, go ahead. Or I want to go on, you know, international. Guys do, and I just chuckle inside because I know that a few months later they're going to call me going, I had no idea how expensive it was going to be. But they got to grow. Now you got to lay hold of God. You got to challenge the people, and it does something supernatural. Yeah. Good.
Another question about bringing people to conference. So ideally, we want to bring couples to conference.
Couples or singles. We do not pay for single women.
Okay, so no single women. But
we don't pay for single women, no. And that makes us different than the church world, of course. If we did, we probably would have, you know, five times the amount. You have a whole bunch of single women who could come. But we don't do that. No, it must be couples or...
And as far as sponsorship, you said three couples is what we say, but if you have 20 single guys, I mean, you'd encourage people to bring them all?
Don't say that out loud.
Stop the recording.
Okay.
Yeah. So, not necessarily the concert, but to bring them and have them, you know, give themselves.
No, we have a. These days, what we get is people's like, I don't want to stay in a home, cramped little hotel. I got a Airbnb, and now I have room, and it's in the woods, and I can hike, and, you know, it's something more convenient. 19 of us can all fit in one. You know, that's their business. We have a ton of, in addition to, you know, 500 to 600 hotel rooms, depending on COVID change everything. But in addition to that, you have tons of people who they're coming in campers and Airbnbs, and right, they're staying with friends or sleeping under Granite Creek Bridge or something. I don't know what they're doing. They're here as well. Yeah, that's all in addition to. Yeah.
Good. Pastor, so when you want to start having a conference, either like an organic one or the area one as you referenced in South Africa, does that get voted for or how does that?
Well, area conferences are always from leadership. You have to understand, I would love to say everybody is in this all for Jesus, but they're not. You get guys, it's for pride and ego. So the only way is it has to come from leadership. So it was Pastor Mitchell. Now, theoretically, that would be me. We need a conference here. We need a conference. So, you know, and maybe it's not necessary at this point in time. Or then, of course, you got to be cautious. There are guys, they're ego-driven. We have guys that they are out of ego, where they're planting, you know, six churches every, so they're desperate to try to reach 25. But I know this guy's he's a potential rebel. There's problems with that. So it's 25, but that is, of course, his pastor has to agree. You know, there may be guys that have 25, but his pastor, I'm talking to him, do you want to, you know, I don't think he's ready yet. There are some issues or concerns. So we wait a little longer, and then, you know, by the time they start, maybe they actually have 28. You know, it's not a hard and fast rule. So it has to be by leadership. And in some ways, you know, it's benevolent control. It's not a power trip. It is to prevent fights. We got to step in. That's why, in that way, there's a lot of things you do from leadership standpoint. You're not allowed. It is one of the things you run into is a guy, if you're in a city, you're not allowed to send out a letter area-wide inviting them to anything. And you get five guys. They've all got letters out and got competing events, you know. He's got citywide, and the next guy, he sends a letter, statewide, area-wide, universe-wide, you know. It's a competition. I'm sorry to say that, but pastors are people. They have egos, too. So you got to step in. No, you cannot don't invite anybody. You can invite your people. You can invite your churches. You can't invite anybody else. Because otherwise, then they just fight. It's a problem. So a conference is something that comes from leadership. And there have been times where Pastor Mitchell or myself have refused. We need a conference. And they give all the... I don't feel good about the guy, or Pastor Mitchell doesn't feel good about the guy. We say no. And then shortly after, we discover he's a rebel. He's caused problems. So that was, you know, you got to factor those kinds of things in. So you can't just announce yourself, we are going to have a conference. No. be chaos. Good. Okay.